Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Helen.
And I'm Sarah.
And you're listening to the Squiggly Careers Podcast, a weekly podcast where we dive into the ins, outs, ups and downs of work and share some insights, some ideas and some tools to help give you a little bit more confidence and control over your career development. And this is one of our final episodes of the year, and we thought we would do a year in review. Well, we thought we'd help you do a year in review. And what we are going to do in this episode today is talk through some questions that will be hopefully helpful prompts for you and your development. But we are also going to answer them. So whether you are a fan of the Squiggly Careers podcast, and thank you if you are, reviews are welcome. that would be a lovely Christmas gift. But if you're a fan and you kind of want to know what's been going on behind the scenes over the last 12 months, or whether you're brand new and you just think, oh, this would be a good time to do a bit of a reflection, then hopefully this will be a useful podcast for you.
And two resources that we wanted to mention before we get started. We've got a new HBR article out which talks about how to review your year. So that's worth a read. Some of what we're going to talk about today is in there, but there's some different ideas and some new ideas in there too. So I think they're quite complementary and they're distinctive and different enough that they're both worth your time, I hope. And Helen, let's give credit where credit is due, has created a really useful, quick way of reviewing your year and previewing next year into a downloadable tool, and also has done some really good different options for you depending on whether you are more visual or whether you like to write things down. And also, if you want to see some interesting photos of Helen, it's worth downloading because she shares her four photos of the year. So links to both of those will be in the show notes, but you will also find them in the free toolkit on our website, which is just amazingif.com. And as always, if you ever can't find anything, just email us. We're helenandsarah@squigglycareers.com.
So for this episode, Sarah has come up with the questions that we are going to be reflecting on to review our year. And we have not shared our responses with each other. So you're going to be hearing it at the same time that we hear our answers, which should make for some interesting chats.
Yes, yeah, because, you know, it's been an interesting year. So, I mean, for the first time ever, we've done a few of these episodes, right, where we've like talked about our year. I think this is the first time where we ever had to have a pre-chat about the episode. Do we do it? How do we do it? How honest are we? And we decided honest, but equally we thought about some of the questions so it didn't get, I don't know, too bleak.
I think this might be our third year of doing this at the end of the year. And I was thinking, I'd actually quite like to listen to them sequentially to see what was on our mind at the time.
I don't like listening back.
Done.
Probably tells you something about my attitude for these questions. So let's start with the first one, which I think we have done before. And I do think it is quite helpful. Often, you know, you talked about both reviewing and previewing. Like, I remember at the start of the year, you were very clear. You were like, I want this year to be about growth and good times. So if you were describing your year in one word, has it been growth and or good times, Helen? Or you're going for a different word?
I'm going for a different word, Sarah.
Sure.
I'm going for a different word. My word of the year is conflicted.
Okay. I mean, it's better than mine, so
God, I can't wait. My reasoning behind the word conflicted is because I feel like there's just been a lot going on. So I've been conflicted in times when I've sort of wanted to be happy. I'm like, oh, that's going really well. But then there's been stuff going on around me, stuff with you, which I'm sure we'll come on to, which I think has been a bit hard. And it's really hard to carry those two emotions. You know, when someone is going through something really difficult, but then you've got something else that's kind of really positive that's happened. I think it's very hard to reconcile those two emotions. So I felt conflicted about that. I felt conflicted about work and family priorities at times where, you know, there's just been a lot going on and feeling like, oh, I know I can't give these things equal energy, so where do I place it? I think that's kind of been quite tricky. So yes, just quite not bad. Just a sort of a tension throughout the year. I felt this kind of tension in how am I feeling and where am I spending my time is a kind of a bit of a constant. I don't think I've always made the right decisions, and sometimes it's been a bit difficult, and it's probably made it a bit harder to enjoy some of the moments and celebrate some of the sort of successes. There you go. Conflicted. What's yours, Sarah?
So I wrote hard.
Right.
But I did write in brackets and grateful. And I suppose to your point, that's the sort of the conflicting thing. And so it does show that we're probably feeling the same, probably because our lives are very intertwined. We're basically sometimes partners in all sorts of different ways, more so than we sometimes are with our actual partners, because you can't help it, because we are friends anyway, and we were friends first, and we were in a company together, and it, you know, lots of things going on. And so I think, you know, for me, and yeah, I think I have mentioned it previously on the podcast before, but my dad died at the start of the year, sort of at the end of January. He hadn't been well, but it was still unexpected. And obviously incredibly hard when you lose anyone, and certainly someone so close to you. And so it's really hard that it dominates you. It dominates your days. It dominates your thinking. It means you thinking about your family in lots of different ways that perhaps you weren't before. But I did get to the and grateful, because I also think the sort of reason I've made it through what has probably been the most difficult year of my life is lots of the things that I'm really grateful for. So the work that I do, the friends that I have, you, my partner, my six-year-old. And so I think, you know, sometimes the hard times remind you what you are very, very grateful for and the difference that that makes, because I can imagine an alternative reality quite easily where lots of those things you're grateful for aren't there. And then you go, well, I don't know how you'd cope.
It's just hard.
It would just be hard.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to only hard, but it has felt hard. And, you know, you weren't very well in August, and that also felt hard.
Yeah.
And I do remember having a conversation with you going, but you do need to be okay, because I do think otherwise I am not going to be okay, Helen. Yeah. And I was like, it felt like there's quite a lot of pressure on like both of us just being like, you know, the whole stress bucket thing that you learn about when you're becoming a mental health first aider. I've talked about it before. And essentially the idea is that essentially there is only so much stress we can all take until it like overflows. And then you're like, yeah, that's it. I'm like done.
Yeah.
Essentially I'm either burnt out or I don't know, just incredibly unhappy. And I think this year it sort of teetered quite high, but there was just enough, you know, almost like valves that you could release.
Yeah, I get it.
Along the way,
because like some amazing like happy moments, like we both turned 40 this year. That was like, and I had a massive, probably didn't mean not to you, but obviously I had parties, didn't I? I had these like amazing parties. I remember like in the middle of the year being like, oh, I had this like this festival in my garden, and
that
I had friends
good.
All over.
And I came.
You get, but in my head I was like, and I'm gonna have lung surgery in 2 months. You know, this constant conflict between this is amazing, this is awful. Like it was a very, yeah, funny.
It's hard. It's difficult, isn't it, as well? Because you also go, you almost feel a little bit guilty, I think, sometimes for finding things hard. I think we both feel that. We talked about guilt on the podcast quite recently, where you sort of go, oh, but loads of people have it loads harder.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I go, it's hard, but not hard compared to lots of people. And I think in some ways you are allowed to find things hard, but I also find that a bit of a tension, because, you know, you'll have some people going like, oh, they have like no flexibility in what they do, or they don't enjoy their jobs, or they're working with someone who's a nightmare.
Yeah, manager, and you're like, oh, I've not got that.
Or other personal things that are much, much harder than, you know, what I've had to deal with. And so that creates conflict and tension, doesn't it? So, yeah, I mean, it's not a year. I think we both went, it's not a year we want to repeat, is it? Let's be honest.
No, like, we'll just put 2023 in its box.
Yeah, yeah, and move on to 2024.
One experiment, and what have you discovered, Sarah?
So I actually really enjoyed, we had a week where we did a podcast episode on how AI could support you with like your career and career development. And I think I started that quite skeptical and being like, oh, I'm not sure.
Never.
Yes.
I'm a skeptic.
I'm not sure how useful this will be yet. I'm not sure the tech's quite there. And then I got really into it. You know, like when you go down a rabbit hole, and I was like, oh, I'm really enjoying this. And quite a lot of it is better than you imagine.
Mm.
And it does show you as well that like playing with stuff and taking some time to do that really helps you to figure out what's useful and what's not. And so when I think about experiment, it's not one specific experiment. I think it was that week ended up being a catalyst for me thinking, I could be better because of this, because of this AI. And so don't be sort of scared of it, or don't put your sort of head in the sand and hope someone else is going to figure things out for you. Like, you need to have a go with this. And recently I also experimented with putting some of that AI into my meetings. Some of it is really clunky still, but I think as long as you accept it's clunky and you're like, clearly it's not perfect yet, I do think you sort of start to realize, okay, well, why would I be using that in the first place? What is it that I'm hoping for? And if it's not this, then what else could it be? And everybody's talking about AI at the moment, aren't they? And I think that can feel a bit overwhelming, you know, when it's on the front of lots of magazines. Yeah. And you're like,
well, you feel like you're behind already.
And there's quite a lot of, like, people use, inevitably, not very simple and straightforward descriptions. It's like, even like the word generative AI, I'm like, they're not making it easy for everybody, are they? You know, when people are quite fearful about their jobs and stuff, I'm like, yeah, I think people quite enjoy sometimes making things sound like lofty and inaccessible, whereas actually a lot of it is, okay, you can just go and have a go with it. And so I've started some experiments, I think, in 2023 on that. And now I think I want to be even more intentional about how AI could help us as an organisation to support more people, to make careers better for everyone. I sort of, you start to sense that the tech, which is helpful that we've not had to build it, that people are building tech that could really help us to do a better job of what, like, we're here to do and our kind of mission. And so I'm excited about more experimenting in that area. What about you?
I think an experiment that I reflect positively on is the sprint that we did in August.
That was my number two option.
And the experiment there was just a different format for the podcast. So that was 20 episodes. Each episode was 7 minutes. And it was the sort of this idea of creating learning momentum. And we had no idea. I mean, we were a bit like, is anyone going to listen in August? We really didn't know whether the format was going to work.
It turns out lots of people are going to listen in August.
Lots of people. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people signed up to sprint with us in August. And that was actually when I was having lung surgery. So it gave me an awful lot of energy when I wasn't really feeling brilliant, actually, to see that sprint connecting lots of people with career development was a very positive thing. So I think that's probably part of why I was like, oh, I like doing that experiment. But also it just kind of re-energized me about, oh, what could we do with this podcast? And so to Sarah's point, how does an experiment that you've done this year make you think about what you're going to do next year? We have got a workshop in January where we are going to be thinking about, oh, like, what could we do with the podcast next year to make it even more useful for people, even more relevant for their role. So, by the way, if you've got any ideas, email us. Yeah. But it's just, I think it's just given me the confidence to sort of play around with the format a little bit to sort of bring something new to people with a podcast.
I have quite mixed feelings about that experiment because I think the outcome of it was very positive, you know, in terms of it made learning last, it created a community, lots of things that we were trying to do. It's also quite interesting, I think, as a reflection, how much energy experimenting takes, because I really remember the conversation that we had, which was, oh, maybe we pause the podcast, you know, in August, you're having lung surgery, a lot has been happening. I think at that point in the year, I was really feeling it. I think, you know, the sort of the, you know, everything was feeling quite overwhelming. And we went from, we might pause the podcast to, we're going to do 20 episodes. I've got some very distinct memories of that day and finding that very difficult when we were trying to do a lot. You know, when you talk about being conflicted, I still can't decide if it was the right thing or not, because I think I get that the experiment worked, but I think it tipped me like right to the edge, to the extent where I was like, it's the first time I think I've ever felt like almost, oh, I'm going to have to, we were recording those sprints. I always think, oh, I wonder if anyone notices if they listen back. Some of those sprints we recorded on a day where I nearly felt, I was like, I'm just going to have to go home. I don't think I can keep doing this. And I think I just about found my way through it, but I'm not sure how good it was for me. Which I always think it's quite an interesting one. That's something I always find quite hard to work out, is like, oh, but I want to do the thing. I want to do the experiment. But you know, and you're like, but at what cost? So I just think it's just worth, I think experiments are incredibly useful because they give you, it's like permission to fail. You have a clear hypothesis. You can do things quickly. And we did all of those things. But I think it is just also recognizing, sometimes I wonder if there's a right time for experimenting.
Yes, I totally agree with that. I also think it's really interesting. Sarah and I are very different. And most of the time it's actually quite complementary. So I'm a doer, Sarah's a thinker. There are times I think under pressure when it is not complementary, which is under pressure.
We basically stopped talking to each other that day.
Well, yeah. Well, no, but under pressure, you go cancel, stop things. Yeah. Like you're like, do less, stop it, yeah. don't do any more. And under pressure, I go faster, do more.
Yeah.
And so if I think like years ago, when we did our TED talk and we were like, we were under pressure to like come up with an idea. And what was my one? Like, let's do 100 ideas in 80 minutes.
Do you know you were like, we're going to do an idea a minute for like the, and I was just like, no.
Sarah's like, we're just not going to do a TED talk. Yeah. No, we're just not going to do it. We should just stop doing this right now. And I'd be like, no, what we're going to do is cram more ideas than anyone has ever done into a TED talk. And it's just interesting, I think, in those. And almost, I feel like someone has to win. It's a very hard thing because we either stop or I push us forward.
You can't have it both ways.
You can't have it both. And so...
I wouldn't position it like that to me if I were you, because I'm like, well, then... I mean, I hate the idea of losing. So if you're like, so you're basically telling me in that situation I lost, I'm like, interesting.
But many people gained, many thousands of people gained.
Yeah, I'm not sure that would be good positioning for me. I suppose maybe what you could do, it's so hard to do though, isn't it? You know, in those moments, it's so hard to spot, is you could say, well, like, is there a middle ground? You know, like we're sort of assuming there isn't a middle ground, but there probably would have been. You know, we probably still could have done a sprint that was fewer days. You know, we probably could have said, maybe we do a sprint, but it's 10 days, not 20. And that could have made quite a big difference. So yeah, it's interesting. It's a hard one to resolve, isn't it?
One gremlin that you have kept caged.
I liked this question. I like the ones that I could answer easier.
And for people that might be new to the podcast, when we talk about gremlins, this is confidence gremlins. So kind of beliefs that hold you back, almost like the negative narrative that you sometimes carry into your work. Which is a gremlin that you have kept caged?
This was one actually that made me feel proud. I think when you think about caging gremlins, you feel good about yourself. So when you're thinking about this, if you're listening, like, hopefully this will make you feel kind of positive about your progress, even though it's always hard to cage gremlins. So I had numbers and money gremlin. So I feel like this year I've taken a lot more accountability and responsibility around lots of things to do with like numbers and money, essentially. And so the way that that shows up, I try to be really specific. I feel more confident asking questions. I feel more confident asking people for what I need to make sure that I understand. So things like writing stuff down really helps me. And also I feel less apologetic about sometimes, you know, my lack of capability. So I think previously I would have been like, I'm not good at this, and this is sort of my problem. Whereas what I have seen is that actually by just asking the questions, not being afraid to do that, sometimes they're useful. Not always. Sometimes I just don't know and I just need some help. But I have seen examples where I'm like, that is a good question, Sarah. And actually, you know, like that thing about you're starting from scratch, you don't really know, and perhaps you don't understand, taking people back to basics is useful. And so I feel a lot less sort of apologetic about my lack of ability in that area, and more like, well, no, this is like, I can be useful and I can keep that gremlin caged in a way that I think I've never felt before.
And I think your questions actually are more than taking back to basics. I've definitely seen you ask some very direct questions because of, I don't know, more of an interest or more of a confidence, I don't know, but that have spotted things that other people haven't. So not just about going back to basics, actually like a question that actually other people haven't thought or spotted. So it's really, really useful. I've definitely seen it.
It's all really hard, like, right? Like everyone listening, you should know that like, it's always effort, you know, for me. I always am still sort of having those conversations thinking, I'd rather not. You know, when you're like, you know, because going into your courage zone or, you know, really staying in learning,
like a deep breath moment,
learner mindset.
Like, here
I just
go.
Think, oh God, I can't really be bothered. And it does always take a lot of like, but you know, it's sort of, you know, it's worth it. What about you?
I think I have a sort of a confidence gremlin about, it's sort of like a success related one, which in my head for a long time, I've gone like leading is succeeding. And I'll come back to the conflict with this because being CEO doesn't really help over the business. But like I've had like leading is succeeding. So in my corporate career, like I wanted to lead the team. I wanted to, you know, lead the drive forward, all that kind of stuff. And I think, and therefore, if I'm not leading, I'm not succeeding. What I think I've got better at is almost reframing in my mind that listening is how I help other people succeed. So leading is succeeding has sort of been quite a selfish sort of mantra. You know, if I lead, I succeed. Whereas I think I've sort of caged that gremlin and gone, well, actually, if it's not about you leading, what if you don't need to lead? What if you don't need to be the person who runs that thing or drives that discussion or makes things that things happen? And actually, what if the role that you play is in listening and asking questions and sort of not taking a back seat, because that sounds really negative, but what I've really tried to consciously do is let other people lead a situation. And it might be you, it might be you in a meeting, it could be someone else in a meeting. But I think even in our business 2 years ago, I would have been like, well, what's the point of me being in this meeting? I've added absolutely no value. I almost would have felt quite defensive. Like, if I'm not co-leading or leading, yeah, then what's the point of me being here? Or I feel like I've contributed less, or all that kind of stuff. Whereas I think now I can sit in silence much more comfortably in a meeting. And I do not think that affects the quality of my contribution. I think before I would have gone, if I haven't said as much or if I haven't done as much as other people, then that doesn't reflect well on what I'm bringing to this discussion. But I kind of go, do you know what? I don't need to. And maybe I don't need to. And also, it's not the most valuable thing to do. Like, I can sit. And I have measured this. So I have measured,
of course I have.
I have used AI to measure the percentage that I've talked in a meeting, and that the extent to which other people talk in meetings. And it's made me realise that you do not have to, you can lead in different ways. Whereas I think my confidence gremlin before used to be like, leading is the person that sets the direction for the discussion, leading is the person that, you know, always doing it in the same way. Whereas I think I'm trying to lead in different ways, lead by listening a lot, lead by supporting other people more, and not feeling like success is always me filling that space, which is quite a different way of me approaching it.
Yeah, and I have definitely noticed that your listening talking ratio has changed. Like, I really see you're much quieter in a meeting. What's interesting is that you still manage to be energetic. You know, like, you still bring energy. You also create a lot of clarity, because I think where you add value as a leader is in creating clarity. And I don't think creating clarity always comes from talking the most. I suspect the more you listen, the more clarity you can create. So, you know, maybe that's a different way of thinking about it as well. And I really see, like, you're so good at that. You know, conversations can go in different directions and we could be like talking around something. And it's not that you're going, that's not useful, because we often need to have those conversations, but then you are good at going, this is what's most important now, or these are the questions that we most need to answer, or just make sure we don't miss things along the way.
I'm not good at it ever. I can think about some meetings where I'm bad at it. I still lead by leading in a traditional way. And I'm like, oh, I wonder why. So something to reflect on a little bit more.
Should we talk mistakes?
Let's do it.
One mistake we've made, and what did we learn? And we actually do have a mechanism for this in Amazing If, which you might have heard us talk about before. So we use mistake moments. So when you make a mistake, ideally that day, you share that mistake with everybody in the company, which always feels a bit like, ugh. You don't overplay the mistake. We don't want to magnify them in our minds. What we do talk about is, what did we learn? And I do find having some sort of if and then thing, like, if I make a mistake, then I share that mistake with everyone. I think you're just so much more likely to learn from them, because you're looking for the learning straight away. But also, for somebody like me as a thinker, it does help me to move on from them faster. And I also quite enjoy doing a little search. I bet you did the same on Teams.
Mistake moment.
Did you not?
I didn't.
I was like looking, because I was like, oh, I don't want to have recency bias, because I think we did that in the podcast recently. So I was like, oh, I really wanted to think about it. So what was your mistake?
Well, I've got three. I'm going to do them really quickly, because I know this podcast can't go for it. I know you said one, but I've got one silly one that really bothered me.
Oh, yeah?
Getting my hair cut short at the start of the year.
Hello, that's not a real mistake.
No, it is, because the reason...
To be fair, it did really bother
me. It did really bother me. But the reason it was a mistake was because I was like overly influenced by the opinion of my mother. You know, you're like, I'm supposed to be a grown-up, and my mum's opinion about my appearance affected me. So I was like, that's a mistake. Like, don't bring like childlike.
I'm glad the hair's gone long again.
Yeah, the hair's long again. Two, my other ones, sticking with learning. So there are two learning moments this year that I could have made last better. That's really bad English, but basically could have stuck a bit better. So we did mental health first aid training, and that was an investment of time. And I think, do you know what? I've not gone back to that. I've not thought about, what am I doing differently as a result of that training? And I think I should go back to that and do that. Mm-hmm. Also, Sarah and I did a meditation course, the timing of which was not ideal for some of the things we've talked about. But I haven't stuck at that. I still do it, but inconsistently. And I feel like, oh, that was quite a big investment. It was quite a big commitment. And it definitely resonated with me more than Sarah. And I feel like I want to do it more. That's the thing. And yeah. I need to find time. So I feel like, well, I should have stuck at that.
You then, messaged me this morning. Oh, I'm meditating. And I was like, is that just entirely. Because we're doing the podcast? Yeah. So you can say that you've done it.
I also forgot my headphones on the train. And I was like, okay, I've got 20 minutes before I get to Marylebone. It's great, great. That's the amount of time you're supposed to meditate for. And then my other one was, I feel like I've dropped my reading days. That was a mistake this year. And that is definitely something I could do different. So reading days for me are like a dedicated day where I do not open my laptop and I take a few books to a quiet place and I literally post-it note, highlight, and it really stimulates my thinking. Sarah, I think you are a much better continual reader than me. I find reading, I engage with it more when I'm kind of like dedicated, and I've dropped my reading days. So three mistakes for me. There you go. We're supposed to do one.
Mine was, I worked on something. So we were working on a potential kind of collaboration project to write an article about something. And I was working on it with somebody else, so not with Helen. And actually was enjoying it. I was like, you know, opportunity to collaborate with someone different. It was actually giving me, almost like the process was giving me a lot of energy just to, this person was very different to Helen, but also very different to me. And I was like, oh, this is just like fascinating. And, you know, we sometimes don't get the chance to do those things very often. The mistake I made is I realised it was something that Helen did need to be involved in, but I involved her way too late. And then it actually created like challenges in terms of, it created a bit of friction for us, which actually we have got better and better at sort of going, it's created friction, we fix it fast.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah. Acknowledge the friction.
I think previously that would have been much harder. I felt really bad, actually. I felt really bad in that moment, but I think I got past that much better. I could sort of let it go a bit better because I didn't like that. I didn't like the idea of you not feeling involved when you wanted to be. And usually, you know, when you're like, it feels unusual because 90% of the time, I sort of back our judgment. You know, like we know when to involve each other. We know what that looks like. Where I think, you know, we talked about the learning from mistakes. This is where I think mistake moments are really helpful, is more it prompted us both to ask the question, okay, well, what did we learn from that? And actually it was just being about really explicit where we do need to be together. Like, where are we better together? Where most of the time is it kind of okay? Because we often do have to progress things individually. And I do think it's quite funny. I do really remember for like about 2 weeks, we both got a bit intense with each other, being like, oh, do you want to be involved in this? And I remember you being like, do you want to be involved in this? It's like, no. Like, I never want to be involved, really, in most things. And then I think we were both a bit like, oh, because we were sort of surprised by, you know, sometimes when you're surprised by something, then I think you sort of go the opposite direction. And then I think we just actually refound our flow and went, oh, actually, do you know what? It's just that anything in these three areas are so strategically important to us, we've both got to be involved. And if we're not, you've got to say it out loud. So actually there is something we're working on at the moment where you're taking much more of a lead and it would be strategically important. But the difference is we've had the conversation to go, okay, we actually physically both don't have the time to do this, but we feel okay about it. So you've sort of flagged it, you know, like the fast flag. And so that was just memorable for me because I think I was actually felt really pleased with how we both learned from it and moved forward fast, which is not something I always find easy to do.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
one win outside of work. Have we got any wins outside of work?
Yes. Well, I was trying to work out, is this outside of work?
Oh, go on.
Well, I don't know. Is EY, Ernst & Young winning women? Is that, okay.
I mean, you're going to have to say what that is for now. But
I won a place on Ernst & Young's Women programme, which is exciting. Is that not outside of work?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. Marketing Society Fellowship, is that outside of work?
No.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, something outside of your...
I had a lot of parties this year and I've loved them.
Well, there you go. That's better.
Okay, great. What's yours?
My win was, so I have always been good at walking. So walking to take a break, walking to clear my brain, just like random walks. But my exercise has sort of been limited to that for like the past couple of years. Whereas this year I have discovered new exercise and doing something called reformer Pilates, which is like with a machine essentially, and kind of bar Pilates, which is actually just incredibly hard and feels like a HIIT class. But I've really committed to that. And in most weeks, I've done one or two classes. And I think that has really helped me this year. You know, when somebody said to me, actually, it's almost like not the positive endorphins you get from exercise that matters. It's what you're missing when you don't exercise. You know, almost like it's kind of like the opposite that's the problem. And I think I have just seen and reminded myself this year that actually doing some exercise that you broadly enjoy... I'm always a bit scared of one of the classes because it's quite hard. But you know that you broadly enjoy. I just always feel so much better. And I think my brain is better. I think my work is better. And I've sort of, when I first had my little boy Max, I did some running for a bit, which I hate. But I did it because that was the only exercise I could do. Then I think actually, funnily enough, the happier I got, the less exercise I did. but in terms of like my general life. But now I think I'm at a point where I'm like, well, I can fit some exercise into my week, but you've got to choose to do it in a way that works. And I don't think walking quite counts. I think I walk for different reasons, not really for exercising. And you know, the whole like body-mind connection, I sort of do believe that that matters. And so it's just actually been quite a big part of my year. It's just, it wasn't there before. And I've even got a little bit, dare I say, of community.
Oh, as in,
like,
gosh.
I know the founder of the studio. She does it as like a side squiggle. She's got a day job. I recognise some of the people. And like, I don't know, it has a quite...
Very anti-Sarah.
I know.
She made some connections with
I
people.
I know, which does feel, yeah, this is what's happening to me. I don't like it. So it's not quite as anonymous as I would usually go for. But I think it's been really good for me.
I feel like exercise is quite a Sarah feature. One of my defining memories of Sarah when we first, actually it was way before we were friends, because I was like, I'm never going to be friends with you, was when we were at university,
sure.
Within our first like week or two, we went on this like, what was like a retreat to all get
awful.
To know each other better. Which was mainly like, I mean, it was mainly for like socialising and drinking and having fun. But I just remember there was this like, first day or two when some people decided to go for this random run. I remember thinking, and Sarah was, and you were like, I just remember you going off. There was you and there was Claire. I remember you. And then there was some other people and you went off for this run. And I was like, that's crazy. We could be all like
drinking,
going to get to know each other. But I mean, that is still the reality of like the things that we probably choose to do in groups of people. But yeah, I do feel like exercise is a feature of you. So when it's not there, you know, when you're not doing netball or you're not doing something, there's not a good reason why, like there's something going on, there's too much work or you're too...
Yeah, and you know, and you realise you're like, oh, I've sat at my desk all day and then all night, you know, almost like yes, with some breaks in between, but I think that's such an easy trap to fall into. And you know, the whole like blurred boundaries thing, and I love working in such a flexible way, and that can sometimes end up showing up as just working all the time. And I think it stopped me from doing that.
A moment that was memorable. I went through my diary for this.
I did, but I was like, oh, I wonder if we'll have the same one.
I went with 10 Downing Street.
Me too! Oh, because also, how often do you go to 10 Downing Street?
I'd forgotten about it, though.
Oh, so no, I hadn't, because that's where I met Pinky, who came on the podcast.
Well, I was like, you know, it is recency bias, so I had to go through my diary, start of the year, and I was like, oh my gosh, that was... amazing.
And we thought
memorable.
It was a scam. So we got this letter saying we'd like to invite you to Downing Street. I think it was like International Women's Day, wasn't
Word
it?
Word document.
It was a Word document.
With like a...
It didn't look that official.
Clip art
I honestly saw it and I was like, okay, well, whatever, that's not a real thing.
I Googled the phone number to make sure that it wasn't like going to ask us for money. And I was like, no, it does look like the Downing Street dashboard number.
And it's one of those things where you're like, it's not really a real thing. And it's not like a... You know, like, I think there are other things that I feel much prouder of, but I think it's so... The fact we got to do it together,
yes.
I think, matters to me. And it feels really unique. And
it was
it's iconic.
Timing. It was.
We probably needed it in that moment in our year. Because I want to say March. Because, of course, it was International Women's Day, so it would have been March. So I was like, probably quite good timing for us. And it was just one of those things where you're like, oh, this is something unexpected that just makes you feel good because you'd been sort of selected because you were running a female business, I think. And we got to meet some interesting people. And we just got to, my favourite bit was like, we actually got to take a picture outside the door. And I was like, I never like having my picture taken. But that picture, I was like, that feels like a really special moment.
I remember it was really rainy day.
It was really rainy, yeah. We saw Rishi Sunak for like 5 minutes. He came in and sort of did his thing. And met some really interesting women who ran loads of like interesting companies. So yeah, it was just one of those things where you're like, I like the kind of unexpected stuff along the way that we get to do.
An example of when you've learnt a lot.
Go on, you go first.
So I think it's a little bit hard to talk about this one because there's some things we can't say yet, some things that are coming next year. But there was a writing thing that we were doing this year. And so I'll try and do it without giving too much away. Sarah and I were thinking, oh, we'd like to write another, what I'll say is the big book, another kind of big book like Squiggly and like You Coach You. We really care about making books useful and unique. And so we were trying to really find the idea. I think on reflection, we were trying to force the idea. We were going back and forth over lots of notes and lots of WhatsApps and should we write about this and should we write about that? And it wasn't quite clicking. And then what we did was another writing project, soon to be released, which was much more creative without any pressure. And it was Sarah and me, I mean, being together in her garden. And this project without the same amount of pressure felt more fun and it felt more creative. And as a result of that process, we kind of unexpectedly came up with the idea for the next big book. All of this will be revealed very soon, everybody. I'm sorry I can't be more specific. But the thing that I learned was when you are trying to force ideas, it often doesn't work. And putting yourself in a creative space without the pressure, you know, we often talk about play and actually just Sarah and my brains getting together with just a, oh, what if and how could we and have you seen this? I feel like that's just where the good stuff comes. And so what I learned was I think that taking the pressure away is important sometimes and just having space to play and putting our brains together on something and just sort of seeing where it gets us, but without us always having to come up with the best idea. Finding time for that, I think, is important for how we support Squiggly Careers.
Well, mine is actually a bit of a combination of that question and the next one, which is one person who's made a difference to your development. So I've actually combined both of those two together. So over the past year, I'm definitely somebody who during the pandemic, I wasn't quite as good at creating connection and building a network in a way that works for me. Partly because I think my excuse, and I think it is a bit of an excuse, would have been, oh, we were really trying to run our business and it was growing. And so I think in hindsight, I was quite head down, you know, and was like, what do we need to do to make amazing if work and amazing? And sort of was much less about kind of building relationships beyond the ones that we kind of needed right now. And so over the last year, I've really tried to make more of an effort to think about, well, who am I learning from, spending time with some different people in different places. And so I've learned a lot over the last year where I go to these very informal, so it works really well for me, it's not too formal, very informal dinners, which are usually in just an office that belongs to one of the people who comes along. And it is 6 to 8 people who all run their own companies. Similar-ish size to us. Most of them are actually probably a little bit bigger. They probably all have a little bit more experience than we have. But everybody just rocks up with some food and we just sort of like order something from like delivery. But there's a little bit of an agenda, which I also really like. This appeals to me on all sorts of levels. It's informal, it's 6 to 8 people. They're all sort of smart, sparky people. And then there's some questions to guide the discussion, which get agreed beforehand. So someone will start and just be like, what's on everyone's mind? And then you end up with this kind of 3 to 5 questions. And everybody takes it in turn to host. And I hosted one this year. And it would have been really easy for me to not do that. There's no pressure to do it. And also we don't have an office. And I was a bit like, oh, I need a space. But I was like, okay, I'm not going to let that stop me. And I've got a friend who has a brilliant business called Kaleido that makes delicious food. I was like,
I saw her Kaleido rolls in Harrods at the weekend.
I know.
They look great.
And so we ordered her food and we got everyone together. And I think I have learned a lot from spending time with those people because sometimes what's on their mind is not on our mind. And I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting. Should it be? Or is it just different dynamics? And I think that group of people have made a difference to my development because they've encouraged me to see Amazing If differently, to ask different questions, maybe to think further ahead. Because I think because they are almost like, it's like they are all further ahead really in terms of stage and age and ambition. And like where they are, it's made me question, well, what does that mean for us for now? And would we want to do something similar, or would it look just very, very different? So yeah, it's just been a really good experience, and I've prioritized it, made time for it for the whole year. It's something I always really look forward to, which I think is a good sign. Mm. And I do like the sort of the, it all feels very sort of supportive, but also closed. So I never worry about, you know, what you're going to share. I just feel like everyone is there to support everybody else to succeed. And there's just some really interesting conversations. So that's something I'm kind of really grateful for. And I just feel like I've learned a lot through those conversations.
Again, I have three. I'm not sure if I'll have three. Because my first one feels like a bit of a cop-out, but I think it's really, you have made a difference to my development. And I know, and I feel like it's a bit of a cop-out because obviously you have, but you really have. And I think this year in particular, Sarah has many talents, but I think like tenacity, commitment, you know, your ability to work across multiple things with the same level of energy. Like you often say that about me, but I've seen it so much in you this year, your drive for completing things and your tenacity to improve things and make it better. I've just seen on countless times, and I think it's just made me think, oh, when could I be more like that? Or how could I be more like that? I think you just set a very, very high bar. You do. You cannot not develop yourself when you work with Sarah, because you set a very high bar that always makes you think, oh, how do I keep contributing? What am I adding to this situation? So I think that feels like a bit of a cop-out one, because it's you, we work together, but I think I wanted to acknowledge it. The other two, one is also kind of the network that I'm part of. So I want to kind of give a shout out to Gemma, a friend, Gemma Greaves, who runs a network called Cabal, which is a social network, less that we don't have an agenda like Sarah's. But there are often,
it's
often
also probably why they're a good fit for our respective personalities.
They are. But I have found that very fueling. So I have more energy for the work that Sarah and I do because I'm part of that community. Because if I've had a hard day or there's been a lot on and I might feel quite tired, I feel re-energized by spending time in that community that Gemma has created. So that's definitely made a difference to my development. And then one other person, which is a bit more kind of recent really, is Aviva Wittenberg-Cox.
So, oh, she's so great.
She is really great. So she's made a difference to my development, both because I really admire her expertise in the area that she works on. So sort of, she's talking about sort of longitudinal leadership and kind of generational diversity in organisations. I just find it's making me think differently about the work that we do. But also just how she works, I think, is very interesting. She is very generous. She is very sharing in terms of her platform. So she writes for Forbes, for example, and she's very giving in terms of how can I use my platform to support your work.
And also, what was the first thing she said when she met us together?
Oh, I don't know what she said.
Do you not remember?
So probably something that, well, it makes you smile. So it's something that's made you quite smug. What was it?
So I think you had already met her.
I had a lovely lunch with her. It was great.
And then we were together and we met her at an event that we'd invited her to speak at for us. And she met me and she was like, oh, Sarah, the better half. And I absolutely loved it.
She's also just charming.
She's very charming.
I wouldn't bank that as
factual. And I was just like, I love you. But yeah, she's brilliant. And I think we're going to be talking to her on her podcast in the new year.
We are. I'm very excited.
So one knot that you want to untangle in 2024. So we have started as a team sharing our knots. So we describe it as what's not working for you. And already, I think that has been really productive. Even just by, we just have a Miro board that we use across the whole team. Even by everyone just sort of saying them and sharing them. And then we sort of did a session where everyone just sort of very briefly and succinctly described their knots. I think people have individually just made more progress, or they've teamed up to sort of do some untangling. And then we did one session together where we were like getting our brains together to try and untangle some of the knots. And that seemed to work really well. So I really want to keep that momentum going around knots, because funnily enough, it actually can feel very positive and optimistic, because actually untangling is a good thing. Mm. You might start off feeling a bit negative because you're like, oh, look at all these knots. But then you're like, but not if you make progress on them. So what's a knot that you want to untangle? Too many knots.
Well, one that I've mentioned already is like the reading days, because has not worked for me this year and I find it really important. This one is like, it's just really boring.
Knots are boring though, right? Quite a lot.
So how I manage my to-do lists has gone a bit wrong this year. It has not worked for me. And it's because I've got post-it notes, I've got a notebook, I've got Microsoft Planner things are all over the place, and that's just not worked. And I used to be so much better.
With the old, I remember the Filofax days.
Filofax. I used to have this years ago, this thing called Beezy, this app that probably doesn't exist yet, which used to have like quadrants for my, I used to have a system that worked for me. And some, I don't know why, but I've lost my system. And so for me, I think I would just feel a bit more focused, and I think I would feel better at the end of the day, and I would feel better at the end of the week if I sorted out that knot. So that's my...
I cannot believe that we have pretty much the same knot.
Oh, really?
Which
no
is
way.
Quite unusual for us. I wouldn't have expected
your to-do
that.
List. Your to-do list's a knot.
Well, yeah, I have... It's not just my to-do list. It's my to-do list. It's my notes. It's my thoughts. It's everything.
I think... Brain.
Yeah.
Is your brain not working?
Well, I think it does work, but I feel it also scatters. It's quite scattered is the word. So I want to, my knot is like, I think I am too scattered, and then I think stuff gets missed along the way. So as a very practical example, I did realise yesterday, I currently have 3 notebooks on the go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just stupid. I sort of got angry at myself. I'm like, this is really stupid.
I know, and I'd be like, maybe if I buy a nicer notebook. I'm like, no, Helen, that's not the solution.
And I was like, so, and also I lost some notes. So I often scribble stuff down on like big old post-its that we use for our sessions because they are there. And then I put those in the bin. And then I'm like, oh, well, now I've lost. I actually needed that bit of, because actually maybe it had some other stuff on, but it actually had something I needed. And so I get mad at myself and I get frustrated. And also that takes up like energy.
You know, you have those like, I mean, I actually watch them, but like the TV programs, aren't there like the declutterers, the home declutterers that like come in with their like boxes and stuff? I feel like I want like somebody to do that
it's
for like
hard,
my to-do list and productivity.
I think part of it also comes from like trying out tech.
Yeah, I agree.
And I
then
don't
you get
want
a bit
to,
distracted by...
I don't want to stop like trying out tech. So actually the Miro board, for example, for the knotty moments has worked really well. And we haven't lost anything there because we sort of all agreed to do it in that way. I think it's my own system, and we've talked about as a company, oh, should everybody do the same thing? I'm quite anti that because I do feel like everyone needs to create the system that works for them.
And everyone's creating actions for each other. It's a complicated
but it's
thing.
But it's a tricky thing to get right. And you're like, well, like I can think of about 3 actions that I need to tell you about today. And then I'm like, well, what do I do? Do I just talk to you?
Well, there is a clear, even though our solution might be different, our system and our solution might be different, we should probably talk about it together, given how interrelated. And we've got the same knot. Imagine if we both solve that.
Well, imagine if, I always think, imagine if WhatsApp goes down.
Like,
would our business just die? Because sometimes we make quite important decisions via WhatsApp.
We do.
So I think we'll move on from that one. And we thought we would finish, if you're still with us by this point. I do sometimes wonder if these podcasts are just a way of us having a conversation at the end of the year.
I mean, it really is a look behind the scenes, isn't it? It really is.
None of our other podcasts are like this. Usually, by the way, I mean, if this is your first listen, I'm like, it's not that reflective of the other podcasts, which are more practical and to the point, probably. But to final question, a high energy opportunity or learning that you're looking forward to next year?
The thing that I mentioned that apparently was a win I'm not allowed to have because it was work related, the EY winning women thing. We have got a moment where that whole community is coming together in Istanbul in April. And I'm so excited. I've had a couple of like meetings with the women in that community and I feel lifted by them, lifted by their energy, lifted by their ambition. I don't think I have a network like that of ambitious women doing brilliant things all over the world. And I'm really excited to learn from them and be energised by them and bring back all that energy into our business.
Mine is we are creating a community to test our ideas with in the first half of next year. Some ideas for the big book thing that Helen sort of half mentioned, which we'll share very soon. And also I'm like, we're not allowed to say it out loud. It's also not that exciting, is it? It's very exciting
for
us.
Exciting.
I know, but you know when you're like, it's not like a Strictly announcement, like who's going to be on Strictly this year or whatever.
It's a squiggly announcement.
It's a squiggly announcement. And I think we've not for a while, and I think I miss, creating things from scratch, like ideas from scratch, models from scratch, that then you can test in a workshop environment and people, and you can sort of see very quickly, oh, that one just didn't stick, didn't seem to work for people. People got a bit confused. That sometimes happens. Oh, but this one feels really memorable. And then that gives you a lot of confidence to build on it. And it's sort of how Amazing If started. And I often think it is as at our best. You know, when we sort of go, we need to create a way to help people get feedback faster. And then we're like, right, okay, well, that's the problem we're trying to solve. What about this? What about that? What about this? And we're going to create this kind of high learning community. And I'm just really excited to do something that is sort of designed to be very work in progress. That's all about learning. It's all about testing ideas. And I think if you sometimes don't have a forcing function to make those things happen, the risk is you end up a bit too much on repeat. And I see that sometimes where, you know, you've got a lot going on and you're like, oh, we're sort of doing the same again. And I always want to feel like we are kind of pushing into more useful, better continual improvement, which is probably how you were describing me when you were like relentless, basically. Relentless slash high bar, which I think you described it quite nicely. And I was like, is she basically just saying I'm relentless? But that's a conversation for another day, right?
So we hope you have found that interesting. Is that interesting?
I don't know.
It's been very real, everybody. You've really heard what's been going on in our worlds and our lives over the last 12 months. To make it useful, though, there are a set of questions there which will hopefully be useful for your reflection. And we would really recommend that you have this as a conversation with somebody else, because it is just interesting to hear what's going on in someone else's head and what's been going on in someone else's world. And I think it deepens your reflection and creates a bit more clarity as well. So we'll put all those questions on the pod sheet so that you can maybe print that off and fill it in as you go. And if you have any feedback for us on what has been useful or helpful for you this year, or any memorable moments from listening to the Squiggly Careers podcast, please let us know. We are Helen and Sarah at squigglycareers.com.
Thank you all so much for listening in 2023, and we'll be back with you again soon. Bye for now.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.